Hi, and welcome to Dog Talk with Dr. Jen. I'm Jennifer Summerfield, a veterinarian and professional dog trainer. Join me every episode for handy tips on training and dog behavior to help you better understand your best friend. Hello, guys, and welcome to today's episode of Dog Talk with Dr. Jen. Today, we are going to be talking about dogs who bark at things, which should be a pretty exciting topic. I know this is a really common problem that clients ask me about, and something I can relate to with my own dogs as well. So obviously, this is a pretty broad topic. We are going to be breaking it up into a couple of parts. So today, we're going to be talking mainly about dogs who bark at things when they're in the house. So dogs who hear noises outside or who see things outside the window and kind of go crazy barking at that. And next week, or, you know, next episode, we are going to spend some time talking about dogs who bark at things when they're like out on walks on leash. So basically leash reactivity. We're going to get a little bit more into that next time. So should be a good topic, and I am excited to talk about it. So now we are going to move on and jump into our main topic for today, which is going to be talking about dogs who bark at things in the house, mainly things that they hear outside or things that they see through the window, as far as, why dogs do this and what can we do about it, right? So first things first, I do think it's important to understand that for many, many dogs, this is a totally normal behavior. So we have actually bred dogs for many, many, many generations in a lot of cases to be watchdogs for us. Basically, that's been one function that a lot of breeds have had over the years, where, this is something that their owners actively wanted, was for their dogs to bark and alert them if they heard a noise or if they saw someone or saw something suspicious outside. So not surprising in light of that, that a lot of our pet dogs today still take that part of their job really seriously. It does seem like it depends quite a bit on the individual dog's temperament as far as how much of an issue this is going to be. And we know that some of that is going to be very much breed related, and some of it's just going to depend on the individual. So for example, my dad has a really sweet, just big old black Labrador who, I don't know what it would take to get this dog to bark at something, but he just doesn't. Like he lays on the couch and he's happy and he wags his tail. And if somebody comes into the house, he kind of wanders up to them in a friendly way and, says, "Hey, what's up? Just came to see who's here." But he really never barks at anything. It's just not him. And sort of on the other end of the spectrum, I have three Shelties, which anybody who knows Shelties knows that they excel at alert barking, one of their very best things. And, so they definitely feel compelled to let me know if they see, a person outside or, a bird or a squirrel or a leaf or really anything. Any of those things is very much worth getting very excited and barking about. So, and that's pretty typical. There certainly are a lot of breeds that fall into that category. It's not just Shelties. So important to keep in mind that for a lot of dogs, this is a normal behavior that is legitimately, maybe not great for the people in the house, right? It can definitely be annoying, and sometimes it can be a problem in multiple dog households. I see this a lot where the dogs get really wound up and excited barking at something outside and then sometimes redirect onto each other and get in fights over that. So that's a fairly common issue. And I do think that there are some dogs who seem to be sort of overly, hyper-reactive and hyper-alert to things outside as part of a, sort of generalized anxiety issue that they have. So sometimes not normal. For sure, there are some dogs where it seems to be exaggerated to the point that I don't think it's probably very healthy for the dog either. But in a lot of cases, it is a normal behavior that we just, as humans would prefer to curb if we can. So how do we address this problem? So as with most behavior issues that we talk about, we are going to talk about this from a couple different angles, right? We're going to talk about management, which is important, even though it's not as sexy as the actual training stuff. And I think sometimes we tend to overlook it. And then we are going to talk about some training solutions for this problem also. So in terms of management, why do we always talk about this first, right? Why is it important? So it's important for a couple of reasons. The first reason is that it just is a, you know, frequently some of these strategies that I'm going to mention here are really quick, easy ways to make a huge difference in the problem right off the bat. You know, immediately make the house a lot less chaotic, make the humans feel a lot less crazy, make the dogs a lot calmer. So definitely worth it. You know, you can certainly embark on a training plan to work on these issues, and, you know, I hope you do. That's a, you know, definitely a good way to address it long term. But in the short term, it's huge, you know, to just be able to immediately take the chaos level down a few notches and make everybody a lot happier in the short term. So never underestimate how important that is. I always talk about management as the very first thing whenever I do a behavior consult, because actually a lot of our plan frequently is based around how we can manage the problem, either in the short term or sometimes in the long term, if that's what people prefer, which is totally fine too. The other reason that management is important, besides the fact that it's just, you know, it's convenient and it makes everybody's life better right off the bat, is when we are trying to address a problem like this, it's really important that we not allow the problem behavior to just keep happening, keep happening, keep happening in between training sessions, basically. The reason is that, for one thing, with any behavior, you know, whether it's emotionally driven or it's, you know, a completely conscious voluntary behavior, you know, whatever the underlying motivation is for it, the more the dog does it, sort of the more that they practice that behavior, as we say a lot of times, the more entrenched it gets. Right. And that makes sense at a common sense level to most of us. But also, we have a lot of information about how the brain works to indicate that there are things happening on a neurobiological level that actually really strongly influence that too. So the more these behaviors get practiced, the neural pathways that underlie that behavior just get stronger and stronger, right? Which we definitely don't want. And for behaviors like getting excited and barking at things, that also has a pretty strong emotional component to it, right? So these dogs are in a really high state of arousal, means that their systems get flooded with all these hormones that are involved in that fight or flight response. So norepinephrine is the biggie, but there are some others there. And when they're just constantly getting triggered, constantly getting all wound up and upset and barking at things, their brain is just constantly in this state of, you know, basically being marinated in these you know, hormones that are involved in arousal. So it never really gets a chance to calm down and go back to its normal set point. And as you can imagine, that's going to make your training plan a lot harder because your dog never really even gets to be totally calm in between. It takes longer than you might think for your brain to actually completely settle down and go back to normal at a biochemical level after you've gotten really wound up. And that's true of dogs as well. So for that reason, just finding a way to make it stop in the short term, while we're trying to get a handle on things from a training standpoint, can be really, really important. So fortunately, for this particular problem of, you know, getting wound up and barking at things outside the house, the usual management strategies that I suggest are things that are pretty darn simple and things that are also really effective. So that's kind of a win for everybody. The first one is for dogs who are very visually oriented. So these are dogs that you know, might spend a lot of their time laying on the back of the couch and staring out the window, right? Something like that. And, you know, everything that walks by or everything that moves triggers a big, you know, barking fit. For these guys, one of the most effective things you can do from a management standpoint is to get like a decorative window film. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with these. Some of you probably are and others may not be. But basically, they're these films you can get that come in all these different designs. So some of them look like frosted glass or crackled glass or, you know, stained glass, you know, all these different kind of pretty designs. And you take the film, you take the backing off and you apply it to the window and basically makes the window look like now it's frosted glass or stained glass or whatever. And I really, really love this strategy, guys. One of my favorite ones for this problem because it makes everybody happy. The window films are really pretty. Actually, I've used them in my house before and they look nice. You know, they don't look cheap or cheesy or anything. They're actually very aesthetically pleasing and they're relatively easy to put up. They don't damage the window at all. You can peel them off anytime you want to. So not a problem if you're renting or something like that. You're not going to damage the window. And depending on what kind of design you get, they can be a really effective way of making it so that your dog can't really see things outside very well anymore, but they still let light in. Because obviously that's the other alternative that a lot of times people have tried some is to just keep your blinds down or keep your curtains drawn so the dog can't see, which of course can work, but it also means that your house is just kind of dark and sad all the time. And I know that for a lot of clients, that's not really a satisfactory solution for them. So what I like about the decorative window films is that they kind of meet everybody's needs, right? They keep the dog from being able to see things outside that it goes crazy at, and it also still lets light in and it looks pretty, so everybody's happy. I actually see a lot of clients who initially kind of grudgingly decide to try this as a short-term strategy and end up loving it so much that they just leave them up forever and say, oh my gosh, you know, our life is so much better with this and it looks great and, you know, we're thrilled. So you might be surprised how much improvement you can get in the problem just from doing that. And these are not very expensive. I will put some links in the show notes for today, which you can find on my website, Dr. Jen's Dog Blog, with you know, some information about some of the ones that I like, just some examples for you. But literally, if you go to Amazon or, you know, any place that carries like home decor stuff and just search for decorative window films, you'll get, you know, pages and pages of options. So, you know, browse around, find something that you like, get somebody to help you put it up, and boom, there you go. So the second thing that may help from a management standpoint, and this is especially true for dogs who hear things a lot that they bark at outside. And some dogs may react a lot to both visual and auditory triggers, but some dogs are more sensitive to one over the other. So, you know your dog. But if you do have a dog who barks at noises, it can be really helpful to just get just a cheap white noise machine, which, again, if you don't know what that is, it's just a machine that kind of makes a shh noise, kind of like having a fan or something on. And the idea is that it's just kind of a nice, quiet, unobtrusive noise that is really effective at blocking out a lot of little noises that you might hear from outside. A lot of people use them in their bedrooms to help them sleep. I actually have one that I use for that. Sometimes people use them in babies' rooms too for that same reason, so that, you know, noises aren't as inclined to wake up the baby. For me, this works really well. You know, again, I have Shelties, so they like to bark at things. And when I travel with them on the weekends to go to agility trials or, you know, seminars or other types of competitions that we're going to, I always take my white noise machine from home and I keep it on in the hotel room. And that I have found is really, really helpful at keeping them from barking at things that they hear outside the room. It doesn't cut it down 100%, but it cuts it down like a lot, like probably 80%, which is huge. So same kind of thing if it's a problem in your house. You can just put one in the living room or whatever room your dog tends to hang out in, or, you know, get a few of them and put them in different rooms if you need to. They're not very expensive, but they can be a really good way to just cut down a lot on how much stuff your dog is hearing from outside. And then finally, the other management option that I like for a lot of dogs is that if you know there are certain times of the day that are hard for them, like, for example, if, you know, you live near in a neighborhood and, you know, every day your dog gets really upset around the time that school lets out, right? Because all the kids are, you know, walking home along the road, or, you know, if they have a hard time around 5 o'clock, because that's when most people are getting home from work and there's a lot of noises of cars pulling up and car doors and, you know, people coming in and out of their houses. So something like that. If you know that there's a particular time that's going to be more of a problem, just give your dog something to do a little bit before that time. So give them a bully stick to chew on, or give them a frozen Kong with peanut butter in it. Whatever you have handy, but just give them something that's going to take them 45 minutes or an hour to lay and chew on. And a lot of times, if most of your problems are happening in a pretty narrow window of time during the day, if you can just keep the dog busy during that time so that they're not, you know, planted at the window and waiting for things to bark at, that can be really helpful too. So now we are going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we're going to get into some training strategies to address this problem. So hang tight and we'll be back momentarily to talk about that. So now we are going to talk a little bit about the training side of things. So this, a lot of times, is something that may take a little bit longer than the management strategies we just talked about. So I definitely recommend implementing one or more of those in the meantime, so that at least, you know, your dog's not going crazy barking at things while you're working on the problem. So as far as training goes, I'll give you sort of my quick and dirty simple solution first, because this works pretty well in a fair number of cases and it doesn't take a lot of work, which is nice. So this is essentially, well, I'll tell you a story to explain it. So when I was in veterinary school, the first year I was there that I had Remy, who's my oldest dog, we lived in a townhouse in Columbus. So we did have neighbors on the other side of the wall. And I was always, really concerned about making sure that we didn't have excessive barking because I didn't want the neighbors to complain, didn't want any problems with the landlord about Remy. And Remy, being a Sheltie, thought that it was very fulfilling to sit at the window and look out at the alley that was down below. We had a view of that from my bedroom where we spent most of our time. And he liked to, get really wound up and bark anytime he saw somebody walking in the alley or any kind of an animal in the alley, and also barked a fair amount about noises and things as well. But mainly it was the window that was the issue. So what I did at that time was, Remy's very food motivated, which a lot of dogs are, and I just kept a bag of treats handy in my room. And every time he saw something outside and started to bark at it, I just called him over and gave him a treat. Right? Super simple. And I know you would think that, is this a problem because, am I actually rewarding the barking? And so the short answer to that is no, that's not typically what happens. And we can talk more about why that is in a later episode if, it's something that people are interested in. But for now, suffice it to say that don't worry, you should not get more barking as a result of doing this. So I would just call him over and give him a treat every time he saw something that he started to bark at. And that was a really effective way, for one thing, of interrupting him when he saw something that he started to bark at, much more effective than me saying, hey, stop, hey, be quiet, knock it off. And the really great thing was that within a few days of me starting to do this and doing it pretty consistently, what started to happen was he would see something outside the window and he might give one little quick bark at it, but then he would catch himself and he would go, hey, I saw somebody outside the window. I think I get treats for that. And he would just come and find me and sit and look expectantly at me for his treat, which was awesome. Much better than throwing himself out the window barking. And as time went on, he actually got to the point where it was really pretty rare for him to actually bark at anything at all. If he saw something that he, kind of wanted to bark at, he would just come and find me and get a treat for it. So that strategy actually works well for a fair number of dogs. So if you have a dog that falls into this category, they're pretty food motivated and they also like to bark at things, give it a try if you want to, because there's not much downside to trying this. And for a lot of dogs, it does work really well. Now, is it going to work for every dog? No, right? And that's going to have a lot to do with how wound up your dog gets about things. There are definitely some dogs that just get so worked up about what they're barking at that they can be really difficult to interrupt. And it can be hard to basically train a new behavior kind of in the moment like that because they're just too, too aroused and too worked up and they can't do it. So for dogs who have a more severe issue like that, you may need to do a more systematic type of, basically desensitization and counter conditioning to seeing things outside the window. Basically, that means finding a way to start at a pretty easy level, whatever that might be for your dog, and kind of work your way up as long as they're able to handle that so that you're kind of gradually building their ability to be able to control themselves in that situation rather than just kind of, having them thrown in the deep end all the time and hoping that they can figure it out. And this can be hard to do by yourself, especially for something like this where you don't really have very good control of the environment outside your house. So if your dog is this wound up and you're not getting anywhere with something simple like just calling them away for a treat, I would definitely recommend getting in touch with a trainer in your area who can actually help you in person. For some of these guys, it's a huge advantage to have somebody who can actually, for one thing, help you do some setups so that you do have some control over what they're seeing and you're able to kind of pitch that at a level they can handle. But also somebody who can take a look at what your actual setup is and maybe help you come up with some creative ways to use what you have, to find a way that you can do this that'll work for your dog. Same kind of idea for dogs who are really sensitive to sounds. So again, you can do the same thing, as a starting point to see if it works. If you have a dog that barks at noises, you can try just calling them over for a treat, and you may very well get them to the point within a few days where they'll just come find you if they hear a noise that they otherwise would have barked at. But if your dog, you know, if their problem's a little more severe than that and they just can't do it, then you may need to do a more systematic desensitization with them for the sounds that they're worried about. So one of the ways that you can do that, which has worked well for some of my clients, is if you can, you know, first of all, you need to identify what the sound or common sounds are that really bother your dog. You know, maybe it's something like a car door closing or, you know, knocking, you know, for dogs that get really wound up about knocking at the door, for example, or dogs who get really wound up about hearing a dog bark outside. Those are all things that you can find a recording of pretty easily nowadays. There are, you know, some CDs, or, you know, what used to be CDs. Now, I guess you just download them onto your phone or your computer. And some apps that are actually designed for this that have just a selection of different noises that commonly are triggering for dogs, which is nice if you want to do something like that. You can also do it yourself, you know, go on YouTube and find some videos that contain the sounds that you need and just record the sounds on your phone. That can work too. So once you have your sound recordings, you can work with the dog by starting at a really, really low volume. So like so low, you can barely hear it, because remember, your dog hears a lot better than you do. So if you can barely hear it, trust me, your dog hears it. And you want that to be a level where they're really not having any reaction at all. Or they might seem kind of curious about it, but we don't want them to get upset at all. So you could do something like, you know, you play the sound and you reward your dog. Play the sound and reward your dog. And you might do that a few times a day and just gradually work your way up volume-wise, you know, take your volume up a notch each time, as long as the dog's doing well. And just do that until you get to the point that you can play it at full volume, kind of out of the blue, and your dog doesn't get upset. They just look at you for treats. So I know that a common problem with this is that frequently the dogs seem to know that it's a recording. You know, they seem to know it's not real, which is okay, because even if they know it's not real and they don't react to it quite the way they do to a real sound outside, it's still giving them some practice at learning, like, I hear the sound, I get a treat, I hear the sound, I get a treat, and that's still helpful. Other things you can do to help with that would be to use an external speaker for the sound, you know, and put that somewhere in the room that, you know, across the room from you, for example, and use that to play it so that the dog gets a chance to learn, like, oh, it doesn't always come from your phone, you know, which is in your hand or in your pocket or whatever. So there's ways that you can play around with it to try and make it more realistic in a way that your dog can handle. And again, if this is something that doesn't go smoothly for you when you try it and you're having trouble, definitely just get in touch with a trainer who can actually help you in person, because sometimes there's just a few little things you might need to tweak about what you're doing to make it work better. And you know, somebody who can actually work with you in person can spot that and say, oh, you know, here, I think I know why it's not working. Let's try this. And finally, if you want to, you can actually train an alternate behavior that you want your dog to do, you know, if you don't want them to just kind of come and find you and look for a treat. You can, a lot of times, something like training your dog to go to a mat or go to their bed, you know, some kind of specific spot can be really good for this. So you can practice if they, you know, hear something that they start to bark at, then you say, hey, buddy, you know, go to your bed or go to your mat. And that's obviously a skill that you would want to teach at another time, you know, so that they know what that means when you're trying to use it when they bark. But, you know, tell them to go to their bed and reward them when they get there, reward them for staying there. And that will often turn into the same kind of thing that we just talked about, where your dog can get to the point where when they hear something or they see something that they might otherwise have wanted to bark at, they'll just run over and get on their bed. And then you can tell them how brilliant they are and give them treats for that. You can also do that preventatively, again, just like we talked about in the management section. If there are certain times of the day that you know are more likely to be a problem for your dog, you can just ask them to go to their bed and, you know, either reward them periodically for staying there or give them something to chew on their bed, just as a way of, you know, keeping them away from the window or keeping them busy during that time that they're likely to have a lot of things going on that they may react to. And we will talk a little bit more in the next episode about desensitization and counter conditioning to visual triggers, because that tends to be a pretty major issue for dogs that bark at things when they're out on walks. So we'll get more into that at that time. But a lot of that discussion could also apply to dogs who bark at things outside the window. So, you know, stay tuned for that if it's something that interests you. And now we are going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to come back and talk really quickly about a question that was submitted by a listener about dogs that mount other dogs during play. So if that interests you, hang tight and we'll talk about it in just a second. So lastly, before we wrap up today's episode, I did want to answer a question that I got from a listener named Lynn. I believe that's how she pronounces her name. It's L-Y-N-E. So if I am mispronouncing your name, Lynn, I'm sorry. But her question was basically she has a dog. She said he's a male neutered Amstaff mix, so American Staffordshire Terrier mix. And the issue that she has with him is that when she takes him to the dog park or, you know, when he plays with certain other dogs, he tends to just want to hump them. So he just wants to, you know, grab on and mount them kind of constantly. And obviously that's pretty annoying for the other dogs. And, you know, she said sometimes they tell him off and sometimes they don't, but she just doesn't really know what to do about it, you know, or why that's happening. And I think that's a really good question. So thanks, Lynn, for submitting it. Because I find that this is a common thing, right, that people ask about or a common problem that dogs may have with playing with other dogs. So here's the thing with mounting or humping other dogs in play. I know that a lot of people have heard somewhere along the line that this, you know, has to do with dominance. And so the problem is that your dog's trying to be dominant over all these other dogs. And, you know, that doesn't seem to be quite true in most cases. Certainly we know that dogs do recognize, you know, things like social status in certain contexts, but in terms of dogs just, you know, running up to other dogs and, you know, quote unquote, wanting to dominate them, that doesn't really make a lot of sense. That's not really, you know, what dominance is from an ethological standpoint. So in most cases, what this actually has to do with is dogs getting kind of too worked up, kind of overly aroused or, you know, wound up or excited or sometimes frustrated in play. A lot of times, it depends on the dog, but in a lot of cases, I see that the humping starts when the play kind of starts to get a little bit wild and one of the dogs starts to get a little bit too excited and, you know, has trouble kind of keeping themselves calmed down. A lot of times they'll just grab on and start humping somebody. So definitely can be related to that. And that I think is most common in a play context. It can also sometimes be, it's certainly true that some dogs sort of learn to do this as a sort of go-to way of soliciting play from other dogs. So they don't necessarily have to seem like they're really wound up. They just kind of go right in and start humping, which is unfortunate. This is definitely, so the way that, you know, other dogs tend to interpret this or the way that we can interpret it as observers is that this is a pretty rude behavior, right? So even if the dog who's doing it is only doing it because, you know, they want the other dog to play with them, still not an appropriate way to ask another dog to play. The recipient is probably not going to appreciate it. So it's rude, you know, just like somebody kind of coming up to you and getting way too familiar with you in a bar or something, you know, as a way of, you know, saying hi. We don't appreciate that either. So if your dog has a habit of running up to other dogs and just trying to hump them right off the bat to try to get them to play, the problem is, you know, that could go one of two ways, right? Well, it could go one of three ways, I guess. One is the other dog might go, okay, fine, I'll play with you. And sometimes that does happen. And unfortunately, of course, that reinforces the humping behavior because sometimes it works. Some dogs are pretty tolerant and easygoing and they're like, okay, fine. You know, you're being really rude, but okay, let's play. So some dogs will do that. Some obviously don't like it and they want the other dog to stop, but they're very sort of polite, you know, easygoing, non-confrontational dogs, so they won't do anything about it. So they just sort of look, you know, really sad and distressed and kind of politely try to get away while the humping dog just continues doing their thing, which obviously is not great either. Or the third option is the other dog can be really ticked off about it and turn around and tell the humping dog off. And the humping dog might listen to that and back off, or they might not appreciate being told off and there could be a fight. So any or all of those things could happen, especially in a place like a dog park where you just have no idea, you know, you don't know anything about the other dogs that are there and what their personalities are like. So just kind of a crapshoot. So in terms of what we do about it, so this is definitely not something that we want to just allow because it is certainly not going to be enjoyable for the recipient for the most part. You know, the dog that's being humped normally does not like that, even if they don't turn around and snark about it. You know, it's not an interaction that they're enjoying. And for the dog doing the humping, not great either because at best, you know, they're sort of learning that this behavior works and it's becoming more and more of a habit. Or at worst, the other dog turns around and jumps on them and now there's a fight. So either one of those things, you know, it's not what we want. We want our dogs to be practicing playing with other dogs in sort of a socially appropriate, healthy way if they are going to play with other dogs. So running up into the play group and immediately humping everybody is not the way to do that. So in terms of what we do about it, there's a few, you know, different options here, just depending on the details of the situation. But some options would be, if you have a dog who only does this with certain other dogs, for example, then I wouldn't let them play with those other dogs, probably. There are some dogs that just are not necessarily compatible playmates for whatever reason, and that's okay. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with either dog. It may just mean that, you know, this dog and that dog are not the best playmates and just probably shouldn't, you know, be allowed to do off-leash play together because, you know, the dog being humped isn't going to enjoy it and the dog doing the humping is just learning bad habits, so not good for either dog. So if your dog does this with some dogs, but then there are dogs that they're appropriate with, I would definitely try to just, you know, keep their play with dogs that they do play appropriately with. And there's nothing wrong with that at all. If your dog tends to do it when they get wound up during play, then I would definitely be ready to just interrupt them, you know, kind of call them away if they start to do it, or if they don't come reliably when you call for them, you may want to have them drag a lightweight leash when they play so that you can get a hold of them easily if they start to do it, and just call them back to you. You know, maybe ask them for a few quick little obedience behaviors that they know well. So maybe ask for a sit and a down and a stand and a hand touch, you know, whatever they know, and reward for that. You're just trying to kind of take their excitement level down a smidge so that they can go back to play, and hopefully they'll play more appropriately. And if you're consistent about that, about interrupting play and calling them away or reeling them in with the leash if you need to, every time they start to hump, they often do start to develop a little more self-control and realize like, oh, if I do that, then, you know, then I don't get to keep playing. I have to come back and hang with mom for a minute. They can often become more appropriate in their play style over time. And if you're having a dog who, you know, for example, consistently has this problem someplace like a dog park, it may be that your dog is not a great candidate, you know, to go to the dog park and play if they can't handle that environment without sort of immediately getting too overly wound up. And that's okay too. I actually do want to do a whole episode on dog park stuff in, not next time, obviously, because we have to talk about barking at things on leash, but we'll get to it. And there's a lot of stuff, of course, that we can get into in that episode. But I do find that there are many dogs that just don't handle the environment of the dog park that well. It's kind of, you're depending on the park that you go to, because of course, you know, different dog parks can be different. But in general, we tend to think of dog park environments being kind of a free-for-all, kind of a rowdy environment with just lots of strange dogs and pretty high levels of excitement and arousal all around. And for some dogs, they just don't handle that very well. And that's okay. You know, some dogs, you know, just do better with other types of exercise and enrichment. So I would say that if it's a problem that's consistently happening someplace like a dog park, I would just not go to the dog park for now. Maybe try to arrange some one-on-one play dates with dogs that your dog plays well with, you know, kind of lower levels of arousal and see how he does with that and then go from there. It's possible that as he, especially with young dogs that do this, that as they get a little older, and more emotionally mature, they may be able to handle that environment a little better. And then again, they may not. And that's totally okay too. There are lots of dogs that go their whole lives just having, you know, occasional play dates with other dogs that they get along well with, or some dogs who just don't really play well with other dogs at all. And that's okay. There's nothing that says your dog has to go to the dog park to have a, you know, a full happy life. So don't feel bad about that. If you find that your dog just doesn't do that well in that environment, that's okay. So what I don't recommend is introducing any kind of like physical punishment, anything like that, if your dog humps other dogs. Like I occasionally have clients who say, well, you know, could I do something like get a shock collar if they're going to play with dogs and, you know, shock them if they start to hump? Because that can seem like an attractive option because it's a way to, you know, give a quote unquote correction, you know, at the right time to let them know that that behavior is not acceptable. The reason I don't recommend that, well, there are a few reasons, but the main one, sort of the most practical one, is that oftentimes that's a good way to start a fight between dogs. That often the dog who, you know, is being corrected, whether if it's a shock collar or a prong collar or a choke collar, if you're giving some kind of correction at the moment they're trying to hump another dog, what can sometimes happen they'll turn and lash out basically at the other dog. So sometimes that can start a fight and can also really sort of poison the way that they feel about other dogs over the long term, which can then manifest itself in a whole lot of other behavior issues that you don't want, like, you know, being reactive to dogs or actually being aggressive to dogs on site. So that's why we don't recommend typically using any kind of punishment to deal with this issue. I normally just redirect the dog, you know, call them away, use a leash to get them to come away if you need to, and then just get their arousal level down a bit, let them go back to play. And if they can't, if they're just not able to keep their arousal level low enough to play in that setting, then just, you know, just don't put them in that setting. Find other ways that they can play that don't trigger that behavior. So I hope that helps, Lynn. And as always, if you have questions or topics that you'd like me to address on the podcast, feel free to shoot me an email. I'm always happy to do that. You can reach me at jen@drjensdogblog.com. Or if you go to my website, Dr. Jen's Dog Blog, there's a contact form you can use through the website if you prefer. As always, if you are enjoying the podcast, feel free to swing by on iTunes and leave a rating or a review. That does help other people find it. And it's always nice for me to know if you're enjoying it. I appreciate that. And I think that's it for today. So hang tight. And next time we will be talking about Dogs Who Bark at Things Part 2. Dogs who bark at things when they're out on walks or out on the leash. So that should be a pretty fun topic as well.